Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In his early 70s, author Daniel Klein came to an epiphany while making a trip to the dentist. The dentist gave him a choice of implants over a course of a year, could make him look younger, or denture plates, could make him look older. As a result, Klein returned to the Greek village and philosophers he has visited for decades to discover authentic ways of aging. In Travels with Epicurus, a journey to a Greek island in search of a fulfilled life, he concludes that old age is a privilege to be savored, rather than a disease to be cured or a condition to be denied. Daniel Klein is the best-selling author of the writing team that created such critically acclaimed books as Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar and Heidegger and a Hippo Walk Through Those Pearly Gates. It is a great pleasure to welcome Daniel Klein to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. Always a pleasure to see you.
A pleasure to see you, Joe.
What, obviously we mentioned the dentist.
Yes.
At what point did you realize that it was indeed an epiphany?
Well, maybe epiphany is too dramatic a word because it happened gradually. I kept seeing people my age, you know, in their 70s, who were getting very, very busy because they wanted to accomplish the stuff they hadn't accomplished so far. They wanted to leave their mark. They wanted to see all the places, you know, like in a thousand places to see before you die, before they died. They saw this period of their lives as a time to rev up their machines rather than to sit back and enjoy old age for what it's worth. And I've come to believe it's worth something. And something about that just didn't sit right with me. And I guess the dentist visit, which I've come to think of as tooth implants, as youth implants, I think that sort of crystallized it for me. I mean, like one thing that had happened a couple of years ago, it was 50 years anniversary of graduating from college. So they put out a little book, or actually pretty big book, where everybody got to write in a little summation of their life recently, or in some cases their entire lives. You know, and one guy who was quite a successful guy, a lawyer, a critic, all he could write about is, oh my goodness, time is running out. When am I ever going to write that book of poetry that I always planned? When am I going to do this? And then he quoted this Longfellow poem about how a lot of the great things were done when people were in their 70s and 80s. And I looked at that and I said, oh, it sounds too tiring, you know? It just, you know what I mean? I mean, it's enough already, striving, enough already.
It seems to me that you were already wired this way in the sense of it was less of a change in thought and philosophy as it was an investigation of looking at why you felt this way while other people didn't.
I think you're right. You know me too well, Joe. You know, I mean, I've always had a bit of an Epicurean streak in me, even before I really studied Epicurus. This did not make my parents happy, I should add, because, you know, I'd strive a little bit and then I'd take off for this very same Greek island at the age of 27 when I think, and my parents were very disappointed, you know. I should be a lawyer. I should be a doctor. I should be getting ahead in the world. And I was sitting in tavernas drinking ouzo and chasing after Northern European women. Not right, but it felt right at the time, you know. But every once in a while, I would get stung by the striving bug, and I'd come back and get a job, usually working in television and eventually writing books. But you're quite right. This Epicurean streak has always been in me. I should note that Epicurus, although he's now known as the great food guy, you know, if you look up Epicurus.com, right. or it's gourmet recipes. That's a bad rap that Epicurus got, and which he got in his own day in Athens. He was a hedonist. You know, he did believe that pleasure was the highest good in life. But he didn't think that you got pleasure from doing really fancy stuff, you know. I mean, he'd rather have lentils than pheasant because it was easier to digest, easier to grow. His idea of a really good time was sitting on around a table yakking. This has always been my idea of a really good time. And when I go to Greece, you know what old guys do? They sit around tables yakking and playing cards. And I just love it. And I say, these are my guys, and I want to be like this.
When did you first come to the work of Epicurus and start reading and make a connection to it?
Well, I did read it when I was in college. I was a philosophy major, and that's right. What led me eventually to write those Plato and a Platypus and those other quasi, very quasi philosophy books with my friend Tommy. But when I read him, I was aware, you know, here I am 19, 20 reading him. I was aware that he had something to say about old age, but I didn't care about old age. I was full of beans. I even had hair. What was I going to worry about? I did remember that he had said some wonderful things, particularly in his aphorisms that turned up in the Vatican Library many, many millennia later, that he had some great things to say about old age, and that he thought it was a special time of life. You know, when I had this idea, I don't want to go running off to see 1,000 things before I die, I said, I think I'm going to start by reading Epicurus again, but this time I'm not going to skip the parts about old age.
Was part of that going back to the Greek island that you went to when you were 27 years old?
Yeah, it was delightful. I got to tell you, it was so sweet. I had been to this island many times in between with my family, but this time I went back solo. I had old friends there, both Greek and expatriate, who had spent all those long years there. And there's something about the landscape. It's rocky. It's very severely lit by this Aegean sun. It's colorful. There are no cars. There are no motor vehicles of any kind. So everything is done at a walking pace or a donkey walking pace, which is about the same as human walking. Everything slowed down. And I thought, this is the environment that guys like Epicurus and Plato and Aristotle, this is the environment they wrote in and talked in. So it was a nice synchrony of some kind. It was a pleasure to sit in my favorite taverna in this little village and read these guys in the environment in which it was written. It was a treat, I must say.
The relevance is so interesting in that here was this philosopher writing about aging and taking it easy and enjoying the fulfillment and enjoying the process of aging versus trying to remain young.
Yes.
So we haven't gotten very far.
In general, I don't think we have. And when I talk to my European friends, they haven't, you know, Northern European friends, they haven't gotten very far. There is something about the Mediterranean Aegean climate that makes people more sensuous, more slow, more taking pleasure in everyday things. You see it also in southern Italy, southern Spain. And I don't know whether it's just our climate here. It's, you know what America is. It's built on you can do it, you can build it, you can get it. And I like that. I love that. But, I should probably make a distinction here, which I do try to make in the book, and that is between old age, which is what I am. I'm old. I'm kind of done. This will probably be my last book. I have medical problems, which I will not bore you with. Let's just say my bathroom looks like the Mayo Clinic. but I'm not in what I call, quite simply, old age. And we know what that looks like. That's decrepit. That's your brain is really turning to sand. That's where everything is painful. It stinks. It really stinks. And this is the period, the stage of life before that. Granted, there's no fine demarcation between old age and old age, but I have a sense I'll know when I've gotten there, or I won't know which will be worse.
Yeah.
But this is a stage of life. The idea of there being stages of life is something that used to be quite commonly talked about in literature and philosophy, in psychology. Erik Erikson talked about the different stages of life. but it's kind of lost now. You know, there's young, and then there's prime of life, which people are now trying to extend forever. And then they want to go, or they don't want to go, but the way things go, it goes from prime of life straight into this old age where you can't even scratch your nose anymore. And I'm saying, how about let's back up a little bit, and after the prime of life, have an old age. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm not saying I'm terribly successful at it, but I got some clues from reading these guys and from hanging out with a couple of very good friends in Greece, Greeks. And they knew something I don't, and I'm trying to learn.
Daniel Klein is our guest on the book show this week. The name of the book is Travels with Epicurus, and it is published by Penguin Books. In spending time, there is something so romantic about that notion of you taking the books, putting them in a backpack, and heading out in Greece and sitting down and reading these guys. I think many of us want that, and yet when we think of actually doing it, we're busy, we've got to do this, got to do that. It is that, the ultimate taking the time to smell the roses.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost very much, I should add. That's one sad byproduct of the Greek economy. It doesn't cost very much once you're there. But yes, just getting up and going. But, you know, for better or for worse, and my parents aren't here to comment on it, but for better or for worse, I was always good at picking up and going someplace. Maybe it was escapism, who knows. But I remember I had a television agent at one time who was quite well educated, and he referred to some economic law that's true in third world countries, that if you pay a worker too much, instead of getting him to work harder, he quits the job because he's made enough money he can go fishing. So this argued against paying workers more. And my television agent used to say, whatever you do, don't pay Danny too much, otherwise he'll take off for Europe. And that was true.
You write in the book that saying that a man wears his age on his face is a compliment.
Yes. I mean, and this is in stark contrast, I must say, to the idea of getting a facelift or putting emollients on your face to look younger. The idea that of an old man or an old woman's face, which is heavily creased, and that somehow those creases show the story. I think they do. I don't think this is whimsical thinking. They show the story of your life. You can tell by the creases on an old man's or old woman's face what kind of person they are, what kind of life they've led, what kind of challenges they've met. And this is honored in Greece, and I know in Italy as well. And it made me think of another one of my favorite philosophers. He said that after the age of 30, a man is responsible for the way his face looks. What he meant by that was precisely this. You know, after a certain age, it's not just your DNA and your bone physiognomy. It's what you've done, the dares you've taken, the people you've loved. That's what's there. And those are all the result of your choices, not of fate.
Given that in this country we are now living longer, you would think that there would be more of a respect of that aging process and, as you define it, old age.
Yeah, but my take on it, and this is, you know, a generalization, but my take on it is as they extend the lifespan, which I am lucky, you know, I'm beyond my biblical 70, but as they extend it, people want to then extend the prime of life into those bonus years. And in fact, I mean, I read this really depressing book also while I was over there by Susan Jacoby, in which she talks about what's happening to old people in America from a medical point of view.
Right.
And what happens is that most of those bonus years are spent wearing diapers sitting in old people's homes. That's what the bonus gives it. That's what all the stents and antibiotics and transplants and what have you are giving us. They're giving us a longer life. Much of what's added to it to a quote normal lifespan is a life without much fun. I'm not looking forward to that part. I really am not. That's why I want to enjoy this part as much as I can.
So for enjoying this part, and as the subtitle of the book suggests, In Search of a Fulfilled Life, to achieve that fulfillment is what to you?
Well, again, I take I took a lot of what I learned on this sojourn and from the books I read there seriously. I think one thing that's really terrific at my age is hanging out with people in an unhurried way. And one way, and Epicurus pointed this out, many philosophers did, Kant pointed it out, when you're hanging out with people and you don't want anything from them, you don't want them to pay you some money, you don't want them to buy something from you, you don't want them to introduce you to somebody famous, you don't want anything from them. All you want to do is to be with them, to chat, to look at a sunset together, to eat together. It's real communion without any agenda. And I like that. I've always liked that. But I'm doing it more and more. I have more geezer lunches these days, and I enjoy them. A lot of geezers love it. And we sit in a Chinese restaurant and talk and tell jokes and remember old loves. And I think people like that. Old people like me like that. And it's become lost a bit. And the other thing is playing. A lot of these, it's really interesting for me. A lot of these old Greeks say, you know, play, play. That's it. I mean, Plato even said, you know, we are God's, man is God's plaything. So the best thing we can do is play along. And he meant that in a cheerful way, not in a, that we're being batted around by the gods. And you see that. You see that a lot in France and in Italy, the old guys playing boules, you know, that lawn bowling
sure.
game. It doesn't take too much effort. A lot of it is just so they can schmooze with one another. You see women doing that. Often they'll play cards and dominoes together at a table, or sometimes they'll do handiwork together, but as a group. And it's more play than to produce a sweater. That's another thing that I learned from it about this playing. And the other thing, and I'm less sure about this, but certainly Eric Erickson influenced me on this, and that is this is our last chance to take a little stock of our life, to look back on it and see if there is any theme to it, to see if there's any, anything special or unique that makes it your own. One thing that Erickson, when he was at Harvard when I was there teaching, and he always used to put on at the end of his course about the stages of life, he'd put on Bergman's Wild Strawberries. Mm. It's gorgeous, and it means much more to me as I get older. And it's about a guy in his 70s, or maybe he's in his 80s, I can't remember now. Although he's had an accomplished life in science and he's on his way to Lund to receive some special medal from the university there, he's bitter. He's bitter about religion. He's bitter about his family. And during the course of this film, without it being a happy, you know, it's not, this is Ingmar Bergman. It's not a happy movie. You know, it's not everybody goes to the seashore. But he comes to terms with the life that is his. And I'm doing that a little bit, trying to think about it. Not the idea that my life was special. You know, I've become more and more aware of how ordinary it was, but it was mine.
It seems to me that there is a fine line in taking stock of your life, and then, as you described at the beginning of our conversation, of realizing what you perceive the gaps to be and trying to fill those.
I'm well aware of the gaps. I'm well aware, like, of long periods of time where I spent feeling sorry for myself, which I probably, if I had it to do over again, I'd try harder to transcend that. But I don't know, the idea that it's mine is comforting to me. I must say, the idea of, I was interviewed by somebody in New Zealand, of all places, yesterday, and she said, oh, easy for you to say, you've got books that'll live on. you know. So, you know, you've left your mark, so you can let go of that. Well, for heaven's sakes, I don't. My granddaughter isn't going to be even reading my books. They're going to seem like some dead language to her, and my jokes are certainly not going to make her laugh. And I'm always reminded of the time of my wife Frake and I very spontaneously got off a boat in Corfu one time. That's the island between Italy and Greece, and we were on our way to Greece. But it was, oh, we get off in Corfu. Franco looks in the guidebook, and she says, my goodness, some guy who ruled all of Anatolia, all of Asia Minor, is buried here. So, you know, and I'm thinking in this period, I've forgotten what century it was, a long time ago, millennia ago, this guy must have ruled all of the civilized world, and he's buried here. So we say, okay, let's go and see his shrine. You know, we take a public bus, we have to take another public bus. In Greece, it's always funny because, you know, the bus drivers take lunch and coffee and what have you, you know. And then we had to walk, and then we find this guy, Sultan somebody's grave. You know, it's four rocks and a beer can. And I thought, yep, that's leaving your trace, baby. You know, we don't leave our traces, and it's hubris to think we do. And I don't even take any comfort in the idea of somebody in the year 2085 picking up Plato and a platypus. It's not going to do me any good, you know. So, you know, this idea of writing my memoirs, no, not for me. Who'd read it? Who'd want to? I wouldn't want to read it. But for my own self, just having a little sense of the themes and the this and that of my life is comforting.
For people who may not go to Greece, who may not make the travels, I assume that you can do this and take the stock wherever your island may be or wherever your Epicurus may be.
I should hope so. You know, one thing that might help, he said strivingly, and that is reading my book. I mean, I think it gives some kind of directional signals about how to go about it. By the way, can I tell one joke?
I was going to ask you at the end. I was going to say, I'm hoping you can leave us with a joke.
Yeah, no, I feel kind of funny not having... What's become of me when I don't tell a joke? As I said earlier, you know, people have this mistaken idea of Epicurus as this bon vivant who ate filet mignon. And he was quite the opposite. But he wasn't ascetic. He wasn't a stoic. His idea was enjoy what you got, but really enjoy it. And so there is a contemporary Greek joke. It was told to me by a contemporary Greek. And that, oh, just the setup of the joke is there's a little tension between Greeks who have remained in Greece and Greek Americans who've come here and made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done very well, many Greeks in America, in the professional classes and the food business. Well, they've done quite well. Mm-hmm. So a Greek American is back visiting his island. And he's taking a walk along, and he's along the coastline, and he sees an old guy sitting there. And the guy's smoking, and he's drinking a glass of ouzo, and he's watching the sun go down. And the Greek-American says, looks behind him, and he sees a grove of olive trees. And they're in terrible repair. You know, they're just olives dropping and branches uncut. And to the old guy, he says, whose olive trees are those? And the old guy says, they're mine. Ego, and they're mine. And he says, well, what do you do with them? He says, you know, when I'm hungry, I pick one off the ground and eat it. And he says, don't you realize how valuable olives are? Right now in America, virgin olive oil is a big seller. If you pruned those trees and took good care of them and you know, picked them at their prime and put them in a good brine, you could make a lot of money. And the old guy says, yeah, then what would I do? He says, well, you could build a big house and you could have servants to take care of you. And the old guy says, and then what would I do? And the Greek American says, you could do anything you want. And the old guy says, oh, you mean like sit on this rock and smoke a cigarette and have an ouzo and watch the sun go down? That's Epicureanism in a nutshell. I love that joke.
It's a wonderful joke, and it's a wonderful book. It's Travels with Epicurus, A Journey to a Greek Island in Search of a Fulfilled Life. It is published by Penguin Books. Danny, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be here, Joe.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to find this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.